So just by way of introduction, Ken introduced this topic of Jonah and the prophet Jonah to us last week. And there's a lot of ways in which Jonah was a man just like us. I mean, Jonah was certainly called to be a prophet. And so in some respects, you would think, well, you know, Jonah's a holy man and, you know, he's something different from me and so on. But the reality was Jonah was just a person like you and me. He was just like us. God had called him to do something in particular, some particular task, something that in this case he actually found naturally quite distasteful. That would be probably the understatement of the year. But at very least, it was distasteful to Jonah what God had called him, indeed commanded him to do. Now, you may or you may not be a Christian believer yourself. And if you're not, that's okay in the sense that the reason why we're having Kalangra is we want to give you an opportunity to hear what the Christian gospel is all about. That's what it's all about. And you may not be a Christian believer yourself. In this case, Jonah was certainly a believer in the God of Israel. But just like you or me, regardless of whatever our situation is, in this particular instance, he wanted to be in charge of his own life. He didn't want God to be in charge of his own life in this particular instance. We know that because he was called to go and preach to the Assyrians. And you remember that Ken gave us a couple of insights into what the Assyrians were like, and I didn't realise how brutal and murderous and bloodthirsty they were. I won't put it up there because I'm a particularly politically correct individual. I won't put up the shot of was it people being skinned alive, or at least what was that? It was a metal. Was it a stone? A stone frieze of so their own propaganda in terms of how they actually shocked and frightened their enemies was. They would promote the kind of things that they did to people when they captured them. And one of the things that they did was entirely outside the Geneva Convention, which was skinning people alive. And understandably, Jonah found this whole idea of being called and commanded to go and preach to the Assyrians entirely distasteful, not least because Jonah was a good Israelite. What do the Israelites think of anyone who's not an Israelite? What did they think of them? Any ideas? What did they used to call them often? Certain animal? Dogs, Gentile dogs. So to most Jews, people like us who have not descended from the nation of Israel historically would have been considered dogs religiously. He was called to go and preach to these Assyrians, and instead he went in exactly the opposite direction. So in this case, you can see where he should have gone if he had obeyed God's command, go up to the northeast to the great city of Assyria. Instead, thanks, Michael. So instead, he actually goes directly east in the direction of Spain. And we were reminded that at that point of history, nobody really had any clear idea of what was on the other side of the Atlantic. So on the east coast of Spain and France, you know, you look out and all you see is water. I've told people a few times that I've had the pleasure of surfing over there on the Atlantic coast of France, and it's amazing because the sun sets to the west, and it's just a beautiful sight for someone who's always lived on the east coast. But literally, there is nothing between the coast of France or Spain and the United States, which is obviously not visible, not even on a good day. It's a very long way. So he was going as far east as he could possibly go, which was completely the opposite direction from what God had commanded him to do. Thanks, Michael. So you can just flick these next three. So basically what we're going to look at tonight is three things, and that is, we're going to look at the fact of God had Jonah placed into the belly of this fish. Secondly, we're going to look at the way that that whole experience caused Jonah to begin to cry out to God in a way that he had probably never done in his life before. And thirdly, we're just going to look at the way that all of that brought Jonah to see absolutely that the only way he was ever going to be saved was if God saved him. Okay, so that's where we're going. So thanks, Michael. So the fish's belly. Now, this is probably not the kind of subheading you might expect in a sermon, the fish's belly. In some ways, I don't know if some recipes call for the gut of a fish, I don't know. But in some respects, it kind of makes you think of that. But this is a very graphic historic account of something that happened to another person just like us, a person who was really struggling with the fact that something God had commanded him in that particular instance was completely distasteful to him. And the point with this first topic is the fact that God in his kindness sometimes throws us into the deepest trouble and despair. God in his kindness sometimes throws us into the deepest trouble and despair. I couldn't just grab some water, could I, Ian? Thanks. Now that statement is counterintuitive, isn't it? Because God is not supposed to do that, not at least in the way that we would like to imagine God. Why in the world would God throw us into the deepest trouble and despair sometimes? Now, you know, just to get the point, if any of you have been alive any length of time, you will realise that life is not always a bed of roses, as they say. You might have had times where you've been, thanks Gav, really sick. Like deep, deep sickness where you've been, you know, perhaps at the edge of death. Maybe you've had a career that you were really building and you thought that this was really going to go places, and then for one reason or another, there was a sudden job loss and you found yourself unemployed and even unemployable for long periods of time. Perhaps it's the death of a loved one, someone who's been particularly close to you that you really have had a very deep, intimate relationship with, and that person has been taken from this world. Perhaps it's been a relationship breakdown, or perhaps the relationship you wanted that you must have, as it were, and yet it never actually came to fruition, or the relationship that broke down when it was all seeming like it was so hopeful. Perhaps it's something that's happened with us particularly, where we have fallen into some great sin, where, you know, we have really destroyed ourselves and our family by certain things that we have chosen to do, that maybe we didn't realise the consequences of it, but when it all played out, it was entirely destructive in our lives. So all of those things can be examples of some of the most deep despair and trouble that God can bring us into. And verse 17 of chapter 1, this is really interesting. Who was it that put the fish, the great aquatic animal, right there at the right time, ready to receive Jonah as he was being thrown out of that boat? Now the Lord had prepared a great fish to swallow Jonah. The Lord. Think about that. This great animal, this great, whether it was a whale, whether it was a very large shark of some kind. And by the way, animals the size of a grown man or larger have actually been found intact in the gut of certain types of sharks and certainly whales. So this is not an impossibility. This has been seen in the world. But think about the fact that it was the Lord that placed this great fish right there at the right time. It didn't just happen to be there. And just in the same way as the great storm that had come up, it didn't just happen to storm in that particularly violent way on that particular day. God himself had sent the storm and the ferocity of the storm, and God himself had placed, almost with GPS setting accuracy, to that very place next to that ship, ready to receive Jonah. Verses 3, 5, and 6, you'll see also that what happened was an absolutely terrifying experience without any hope. Jonah says, "For you cast me into the deep, into the heart of the seas, and the flood surrounded me. All your billows and your waves passed over me. The waters surrounded me." Thanks, Michael. "The waters surrounded me, even to my soul. The deep closed around me. Weeds were wrapped around my head. I went down to the moorings of the mountains. The earth with its bars closed behind me forever." I wonder if you've ever nearly drowned. There's a few people, heads nodding. How did it feel? Bayo, when you're nodding, how did it feel? Not good. It's an absolutely terrifying experience, isn't it, when you're out the back, maybe at the beach, and you've got outside your depth, and you thought you were doing okay, but then you start getting really tired, and you start feeling that you can't keep yourself up on top of the water, and as you're struggling, you're starting to actually swallow water, and no one can really see you. You know, you can drown quite silently. It's an absolutely terrifying experience. And the experience that God himself had prepared for Jonah was a terrifying one. It was a terrifying one. Look back at those verses. Even those are fine. Just, "Weeds were wrapped around my head. I went down to the moorings of the mountains." What does that mean? It means that where the base of the mountains actually reached the deepest parts of the ocean, you know, down in the deep channels of the ocean, Jonah was very conscious that he was being brought to the lowest point on the planet, as it were. There is nowhere lower on the planet than in the deepest channels of the ocean. If you know, it's bad enough to be sinking in the water and have no one to help you. It's worse, far worse, if you suddenly get entangled in weeds and other things that actually are starting to drag you down. You can't even swim properly. And I know, Hajinda, you're about to have swimming lessons, so this is a scary thought. But the reality is, the better you know this now, but the reality is the water is a terrifying place when it actually, you know, you can enjoy it, but when it actually causes you to start struggling and losing energy, it's a terrifying place. And the next thing to realize here is this was not only a terrifying experience and an experience that God had put him in with the fish being there to take him, that this was actually a long experience that was created by God himself. Thanks, Michael. We lost it. But the point was that in verse 17, it says, "Jonah was in the belly of the whale 3 days and 3 nights." 3 days and 3 nights. Now, this could have been literally 3 full days, or apparently the way the Hebrews used this kind of expression was quite common for it to mean that if there was one day in the middle and some of the previous day and some of the following day were included, so he was, say, swallowed, you know, in the afternoon of the first day, he was in there on the second day, and he was spewed out on the third day at some point, either in the morning or even the evening, whatever. It could have been anywhere in that space of time. So theoretically, it could have been that full 72 hours, or it could have been as little as 36 hours. Whatever it was, 36 seconds going under the water is horrifying. 36 seconds is enough for you to take in enough water to begin to actually drown internally. And you see people on, you know, what is it, Bondi, whatever, you know the one I mean, where you can actually drown when you've been rescued, but you can drown when you're actually on the beach because your lungs are so full of water. And that can only take seconds to actually take in enough water to drown. You actually drown while you're sitting in hospital. And so whatever it was a long period of time. And we don't want God to do things like this, do we? I mean, straight away, we're probably thinking, you know, how is it that God can be loving? And we keep saying God is loving, and yet things like this happen. And this is what occurred with Jonah. We don't want God to do things this way. But usually when we're thinking about God that way, it's because we're actually believing in something that's not really God at all. You see, sometimes, as I said at the beginning, sometimes the real God, you know, the God that really is, not the God we'd like to be there, but the God that really is, in his kindness, throws us into the deepest trouble and despair. That is actually consistent with loving kindness. Because God doesn't stop there. If he cares for us, if he loves us and wants to bring us to know himself, God doesn't stop there. And we'll see that now as we press on. Secondly, crying out to God. Jonah begins to cry out to God. Often God uses these great trials to cause us to begin really crying out to him. In verses 1, 2 and 4, we see that. And it's only now that Jonah begins to pray. You remember back in chapter 1, what was Jonah doing on that boat? As a storm came up, everyone else was praying. Everyone else who believed in all these strange gods, they're all calling out to their gods, save us. What's Jonah doing? What's he doing? Sleeping. Fast asleep. It's very likely, it seems, that up until this point, Jonah has been just running from God. And I tell you, when you're running from God, how much praying is going on? Just about none. You're not praying because you're running. You want to get out of God's way. You want to go in a completely different way. And the last thing you want to do is talk to the person you're at odds with. Everyone else was praying and Jonah was sleeping. But what really caused him to pray? Look at this in verse 2. I cried out to the Lord because of my affliction, and he answered me. Out of the belly of Sheol, which is the valley of the body, the belly of the grave, if you like. So Jonah was at the point of death. Jonah was at the point of hell, as it were. I cried out and you heard my voice. It was from being brought to this place that Jonah, for the first time in probably a very long time, began to genuinely cry out to God. In verse 4, he realizes, I am cast out of your sight. I'm cast out of your sight. He begins to realize that he's cast away, and yet he gets a sense that he's not cast away forever. Yet I will look again to your holy temple. And, you know, one of the things that really challenges us to begin praying to God, even when we realize we've been stuck in a whole lifetime of sin, we will never turn to God, we'll never begin to turn to God unless we see his holiness, but we also begin to see his mercy. And that's what Jonah was doing here. He's saying, I've been cast out of your sight. I am distasteful to you, God, and yet he knows that in God's temple there is mercy. So it was in the physical pain and terror that Jonah was first alarmed to this. And you know, if we go through times of physical pain and terror, and we will, and we only allow it to remain as physical pain and terror, then we will have gained nothing from the troubles that we face in this life. We will have gained nothing, except for a lot of pain and difficulty. You see, the way God would use pain and terror in this life is actually to awaken us to spiritual pain and terror, to awaken us to the reality of being eternally cast away from God, cast away from God the Creator. There is no greater, more profound, more cutting pain than to be cast away from God the Creator forever. And Jonah began to see that as he was in the belly of that great fish. Thirdly, Jonah began to see one of the greatest principles that there is to know on the planet, in the universe, that God alone can save a human being. God alone can save. You see, we sincerely think that we can get ourselves right with God, but we would be sincerely wrong. We would be sincerely wrong when we imagine that we can get ourselves right with God. So think about the many different religious systems in the world. If you're a Muslim, you need to observe Ramadan for a month and fast during periods of the day throughout that whole month. You need to attend mosque. You need to do some good things and give alms. You need to, if you're living in a reasonably wealthy country, you need to make sure you get to Mecca at least once in your life. And so there's certain things that you do, and if you pile all those things up, then hopefully, just hopefully, God will fix you up. If you happen to be perhaps a Roman Catholic or some kind of, perhaps some Protestants as well, who would say, well, as long as I go to church every week and I take Mass and, well, I've been baptised when I was a child and I try and do good things and all of those things, well, I pile all those up and hopefully that will get me to God. If you're a Hindu, it's a similar kind of thing. Certain ceremonies, certain good things, certain pilgrimages, bathing in a certain river at a certain time, etc. So all human religion is about the things that we will do to get right with God. That is the very nature of human religion designed by the human brain. But that's the very point that God, the real God, is bringing to our attention. You see, it's in the belly of the fish that Jonah finally starts to get his bearings. Verse 6, Jonah says, I went down to the moorings of the mountains, the earth with its bars closed behind me forever. Yet you have brought me up from, brought up my life from the pit, O Lord my God. Trouble had brought him, Jonah, to the lowest and deepest point. He was more disoriented now than at any other point of his life. And you know what I mean by disoriented? I mean completely, he didn't know which way was up. And that's another thing about being deep in water and drowning, is you can get to the point where you don't even know which way is up. But now, in that state, Jonah begins to see for the first time. Now he begins to get his bearings. It is God who will bring him up from the pit, not Jonah. You see, Jonah's been thinking that Jonah's got his life under control. Jonah is managing his life quite well. Thank you very much. I'm going to Tarshish. Jonah starts to see what can help him and what can't help him. In verse 8, he says, those who regard worthless idols forsake their own mercy. Those who forsake, who regard worthless idols forsake their own mercy. How many idols do we live for in our lives? How many idols? How many wooden statues did you bow down to today? Nobody's nodding their head saying they did. But what about a real estate agent right next door here? Okay, how can that become a place where we worship other gods? Because as we look in the window and we see those properties and we say, gee, I love that pool, I love those five bedrooms, I love the three garages, what will my friends think about this fantastic house that I'm now living in? We think about riches and property, we think about prestige and respect and a big name with our friends, the affection of that beautiful woman or beautiful man, that sinful relationship, and even safety and security itself can become an idol in itself, can't it? Where we just must have security at all costs. And perhaps to some extent that was part of Jonah's problem. I'm not going to Assyria. I'm going to get killed. But Jonah now starts to see that all those idols that he's had at the center of his life are hopeless. They're trash. And this is the point that God wants us to get to. If you ever want to be a Christian, it means that you need to allow God to bring you to the point where you see these idols that have been at the center of my life are useless and they have to go. Finally, Jonah sees that God alone saves. In verse 9, he says, "But I will sacrifice to you with the voice of thanksgiving. I will pay what I have vowed. Salvation is of the Lord." Salvation is of the Lord. Jonah gets to the very end of himself. The game is up for Jonah. His religious system is finished. And Jonah begins to see that, "God, you have brought me to the point where I realize my silly little religious game is just useless. There is nowhere to go. The game is up." And it's in that very place that Jonah begins to see the deep reality of life. The deep reality of life. See, we're actually not wanting to share what the gospel says because it's just our opinion and it sounds like a good idea. We want to share it because we believe that there's strong evidence that it reflects the reality of life. The reality of life in the world and life in the eternal spiritual realm. Salvation is of the Lord. Salvation was God's idea. It was not our idea. Salvation belongs to God, and only He is the one who can freely give it. You see, when you own something, you can't take that thing from that person unless you're a thief. If someone owns something and you would like to have it, you must ask them for it. And if they're a generous being, they will give it to you. And that's what God is like. Salvation belongs to God. We can't grab it from God and say, "I'll have that. Thanks very much. On my terms, I'm off to Tarshish. But I'll also have a little bit of salvation because I like that. I don't want to go to hell. But I'm off to Tarshish and I don't like the rest of the deal." We can't grab salvation on our own terms, but we certainly can come to this great God and ask for Him for salvation on His terms. We can fall down and we can come to an end of ourselves and cry out to God. And the last verse is somewhat ironic because it says, "So the Lord spoke to the fish and it vomited Jonah onto the dry ground." It vomited Jonah onto the dry ground. Now, I don't want to be silly here, but I think there's a real sense in which the vomit of a fish never seemed so good when you realize it. When you actually think what happened, God used this horrible experience and the very act of now being expelled from the belly of the fish in the act of that fish vomiting. I mean, it's horrible. It's grotesque. You know, when you think that Jonah was now lying on the beach in Nineveh or wherever he was, I don't think it was in Nineveh, but where off on the coast of the Mediterranean, really covered in vomit, and yet praising God. And even the most horrible, grotesque things that happen to us in our lives can, by the grace of God, be turned into the sweetest, most glorious realities, because God is a great God who is a saving God, and God is the one, His salvation is of the Lord. So in conclusion, we've looked at those three things. We've looked at Jonah in the fish's belly. We've looked at the way that became the place where Jonah began to cry out to God for the first time. And we've considered how God brought Jonah to the realization that there was absolutely no salvation for him from any other place other than from God Himself. And so that really leaves us with the question of where are you? where does that leave you? And just the last point as well, and how should you respond to God? You see, troubles or not, God is calling all of us to actually get serious with knowing Him. Get serious with coming to terms with Him and finding salvation in Him. You know, there will be troubles that come, and you can allow those to either harden you so that you actually say, the more this trouble goes on, the more I want nothing to do with God, because ultimately the real God in my life, the God I'm determined to serve, is my pleasure. That's what happens. The God that I'm going to serve is my pleasure. God is not making me feel happy. The more this goes on, the more I run from God. Or alternatively, you can allow, by God's grace, Him to bring you to see that at that low, low point, you are in the most wonderful place to begin crying out to God in a way that you have never cried to Him before. And it's from that low place that God saves sinners. You know, God never saved a proud sinner. Never. If you think that you can come to God with all your good works, with all your ideas about how God should do things, if you think that you can come to God and you're pretty good, you just need a little bit of salvation to fix you up, then you're not going to find the salvation that belongs to the Lord. But God does invite humble, broken sinners, just like Jonah was, just like you might be, to come and to find peace with Him. And you know, that same God is a generous God, and He will freely give you the great salvation that only He can give. Amen.